This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Joyce Goh. And the morning run begins. We start at 6 o'clock in the morning. We take you all the way up to 10 o'clock in the morning. Did you have a good weekend, Joyce?
I did, Sharad. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, okay. Weekend's always good. Spending time with family, catching up
with sleep.
Friends.
Oh,
with sleep.
Sleep as well. Okay.
That's true. How was yours?
I caught up with sleep, and I watched the play.
That's good.
Yeah, didn't do very much, and started reading a new book. Now, quite a bit happened over the weekend, including the end of the ASEAN-Australia Special Summit. It ended, in fact, yesterday, and this was co-hosted by Singapore. It was cited, of course, in Australia, so that was the venue for this special summit.
It's the first ever, yeah?
It is, in fact, the first ever, and I believe quite a bit of discussion about whether Australia should be allowed to join ASEAN. And I think that was something that President of Indonesia, Joko Widodo, or Jokowi as he's well known, said he thought it was a good idea, but not now.
Right. Said. Other topics that were discussed there was also on cybersecurity. That was a key topic discussed at the summit, where I guess because it's a very real issue right now, cybersecurity and cyberspace and data.
Yeah, in fact, there were quite a... Also, there were protests, I think, against Aung San Suu Kyi, reminding the public, both in Australia and globally, of her role in the so-called ethnic cleansing of Rohingya from Rakhine State.
So, they also spoke about, they're looking at, on the agenda, the peaceful resolution of disputes in the South China Sea.
Right.
I think because Malaysia's also involved in that because it's where we are.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, just to look at the big countries of the world, the countries that dominate us, we have news from Russia. Vladimir Putin will lead Russia for another 6 years. He's got 75% of the vote after 50% of the vote were counted. So
this is really quite big.
It is and expected. Of course, his opponents were counted out of the running, as major opponents were. And we saw also in England the case of the murders of known opponents of Vladimir Putin as well. So causing a major issue over the weekend, towards the tail end of last week and into the weekend, if you remember that.
Right. Sharad, did you know that the scale of victory for Putin appears to be a marked increase in his share of the vote from 2012, when he won only 64%? So right now it's 75.
75, but of 50% of the vote.
Mm.
Now, in China, we see yet another consolidation of power. China's parliament has endorsed Xi Jinping not only for a second term, but has also appointed Wang Qishan as his vice president. He's because a well-known ally of Xi Jinping, as well as a anti-corruption campaigner.
Mm.
And also across the other side of the Pacific, we have the endless drama coming out of the White House. Donald Trump has attacked Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Russian interference in the U.S. presidential elections of 2016.
Again, it came out from a tweet, firing a shot from his Twitter account again.
Yeah, and of course we know that he had fired a senior member of the FBI 5 days before retirement. That was big news over the weekend, if you caught that, demonstrating the deep vindictiveness of the man against those who he feels are plotting against him.
Yeah, he likes to fire people a lot, evidently.
He does, in fact, like to fire people a lot. And, taking us, we're going to be coming back with a look at America as well, but through a particular lens. A well-known massacre, anniversary of which was celebrated over the weekend. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Painted Black by the Rolling Stones. That was a hit from 1966. The year I was born, Joyce. Joyce,
go
with
me.
I'm Sharad Kutin. Now time to turn to a really dark moment in history, both for the Vietnamese and the Americans, but I guess all of us, as we're part of this common humanity, and that is the My Lai Massacre. It happened during the height of the American War. war against Vietnam when it was trying to support the South Vietnam against North Vietnam and its plan to reunify the country. Now, that's been 50 years since the event, and in America, they've commemorated this particular massacre because of its importance to, in some sense, turning the tide against the war, because you remember there was a tremendous, there were protests against the war coming from one segment of American society. Seymour Hersh won a Pulitzer Prize for his stories about the My Lai massacre. He won that in 1982. Now, Joyce, you know, for many of us, it's the Vietnam War. Remember, there was a war going on in that region from the French period as well as the American period, as it were. And it's such a long time ago. But many of us in Malaysia get our views of the Vietnam War through American movies made in Hollywood for American consumption. Have you watched many Vietnam War films?
No, not really, Sharad. Yeah. Just, yeah. But coming back to My Lai, as you mentioned, it is its anniversary. Well, it happened on 16 March, right? And I think not many people realize that it was a time when American troops committed war crimes against Vietnamese civilians, and I think it was the single worst instance because of its severity and how they tried to cover it up.
Right.
They went after civilians who had... who were basically
unarmed,
and they killed a lot of people.
Yeah, over 500 people finally dead, both in My Lai and adjacent village. The facts of which, of course, got out because of two things. I mean, some extraordinary courage among American soldiers to voice out what had happened, and also the fact that, unlike the subsequent wars, the war in during that period in Vietnam was covered by a rather free media. If you think of, you know, subsequent wars, you think of the Gulf War, you think of the war in Afghanistan, at least on the American side and the Allied side, as it were, the media has been rather shackled. They've been embedded with troops and such. I mean, these are just code for the fact that, you know, that the Pentagon and, you know, the military really control the media in many ways. Though, of course, we have had some quite critical stories coming out of those theatres of war as well.
That's right. Coming back to your point about how Hollywood has kind of erased in, or it has changed our view on the Vietnam War. I remember watching, I watched The Post over the weekend, and it starts off with the Vietnam War and how observers were there, and they observed that Americans were losing. But when they got into America, what they told the press, I think the government told the press, was that, oh, you know, things are progressing for the Americans. And
yeah, this,
and
would, be the this would be the leadership, side. Right? So the leadership was speaking, as it were, in forked tongues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were saying one thing privately. And what is brilliant about the movie, and, you know, on your recommendation, I went to see it, Joyce.
You enjoyed it?
Absolutely, because, and slightly different from many of the other, you know, movies about journalists and the media, often the journalists are the heroes. In this instance, it really, the heart of it was the owners of media.
It's a tough decision, tough seat to be in.
And the character in particular of that Meryl Streep plays, and of course the changing notions. I mean, it's quite interesting to look back at a time when women weren't respected as corporate leaders, and I think that's also one of the many themes in that. Coming back to the
Hollywood
question,
and the Vietnam War.
Have you been to Vietnam, Joyce?
No, I've not.
Oh, but if you do go and you go to Saigon and Ho Chi Minh City, you must check out the War Remnants.
Yeah, I heard about that.
It is brilliant. Mm. It is brilliant. And in fact, when I was there...
Is it depressing though?
Yeah, in part. I mean, you know, war is not an easy thing. But, you know, they had... when I was there only a couple of months ago, they had... an exhibition on the photographers who served in the war, including, you know, I've looked at four Singaporean photographers who died during the thing. But it is beautifully
they showed their
put
photographs,
together.
As in the photographs taken of the war.
Absolutely, yeah, the photographs of the war and of the individuals, so you don't forget the people who were behind those cameras who took those shots. Next, we'll be back to look at mums and how much they work. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
BFM 89.9, The Tide is High by Blondie, a 1980 hit. I'm Sharad Kutin, with me at Joyce Goh, and this is The Morning Run. It is the 19th of March 2018. We're taking you all the way up to 10 o'clock this morning. Remember, you can always be part of the conversation by WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899 or tweeting us at BFM Radio. Joyce, we promised to talk about mums.
We did. So recent research, Sharad, shows that being a mum is the equivalent of 2.5 full-time jobs. Basically, it has confirmed what every mum knows. It's actually a lot of work.
Just being a mum is 2.5.
It's equivalent to 2.5 jobs, right?
And so if you're a working mum, you have an additional job on top of that.
Potentially, yes. So the research found that the time mothers spend on parent-related tasks equates to a 98-hour work week. And this survey surveyed 2,000 mothers of children aged 5 to 12, revealed that the average mother will clock in at 6:23 a.m., thereabouts soon now, and continue to conduct their motherly duties until 8:31 p.m. on a normal day. So basically, in total, Sharad, that makes a mother's working week about 98 hours of work, or 2.5 times more than the average job.
Do they get weekends off?
No.
Apparently
work
not.
No. Well, but whether you see it as a job, you know, but basically it shows how much moms spend on time on parent-related stuff.
And, you know, the thing, of course, is that none of this should shock us if you have a mum and you were brought up by your mum, and because some people aren't, but, you know, to the extent that most of us were brought up by our mums, this wouldn't surprise you. The question really is whether you think of what your mum's doing as work.
Yeah, exactly,
and you
right?
give it that kind of credit, right?
Yeah, it's not, I mean, for us, I mean, for mums, we do it because we want to. I mean, we love to do it with our kids. But, of course, there are things that sometimes it's just you're on autopilot. You know, but you still need to get it done.
Okay, you say love. See, this is where I think it all goes pear-shaped. Once you bring the word love into the equation, it actually has a way of distorting what's going on. Because if you think of it in purely kind of sociological terms, and, you know, this the facts that you just brought out, is something that sociologists have been talking about for decades.
That's
really
right.
And in fact, into the past century. But, you know, they've always recognized women's importance to the development of capitalism in particular because of unpaid work that women do. But because of love, because of so-called parental duty, and, you know, and the role that mothers have in, you know, upbringing children and saving the nation, all that, you know, gets put in front of the bare fact that women are not paid for this work. Do you think women should be paid for housework?
Well, we're paid in kind and from love. Sometimes, I mean, it depends,
really?
But when you say paid for work, who's going to pay it, though?
Okay,
but
tell
But when you
us
see
you
the
think.
Kids and when they come up to you and they hug you, but this is the reality, right?
This is why this women reason. Have had a bad time. It's because they say, the hugs from kids are enough. Come on, what about the husbands? Do fathers feel that way?
But I feel that in the modern day and age, fathers are more hands-on now. They do help out. I mean, you're saying paying us, it's, I mean, we're all working. We need the money for the kids' education. That's a reality right now. You would rather use the money for the kids. But I feel that our men, like fathers, help family, extended family, even help that we get in Malaysia and in Asia, that helps. The support system is great. And that helps moms to a certain extent. This article actually talks about things that help moms get through the day. Or basically, what can moms live without? Like lifesavers for moms.
Oh, I see. Okay,
and it's
okay.
quite funny. Some things they say, like constant supply of coffee, the ability to nap, being able to put on an effective angry voice. That's true at times. Other lifesavers are like babysitters or family help.
Okay.
Netflix, your favorite. Wet wipes.
Okay.
Drive-through meals,
can
iPads.
Can you watch Netflix while your child is awake? Is that possible?
Not really. They have, if the Netflix is on, it's probably their channel.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
when you're sleeping, sometimes I do try to catch up, but because of work, I have to sleep early. So when they sleep, I sleep.
Okay, so those are compensations of a sort. But do you think, you know, on a more serious note, that women should be, and somehow the system ought to find a way of compensating women for work? We already have a problem of a gender pay gap. So it's not like women aren't even being compensated through their regular work. But even more when you take into consideration that by and large, women, though, I mean, some men are taking on those duties, you know, domestic duties, that by and large, it is women who carry that burden. Tell us what you think. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Remember, give us your name so we know who you are, or tweet us at BFM Radio.
Do you think it's a culture thing? Or do you think, what do you think is it? But it's also in America. You see, this is an American study, and it shows that moms, the job is 2.5 times a full-time job.
Yeah, and so, Americans have culture too. They have this notion called love and hugs and all these things that obscure the reality that women are being exploited in the domestic sphere.
But I feel a support system helps, you know, that helps us, and especially for working moms. And I wouldn't be here today if my husband is not helping me with the kids and sending them to school, doing the school runs, right?
Well, that's... partly his responsibility. He was partly to be blamed, as it were, in air quotes, for bringing the children into the world.
But I'm saying, yeah, that's why, like, fathers are more hands-on now, in a way, I feel, and family.
That is the way forward, I guess. Now, we're coming up to the first bulletin of the morning and taking us there, The Cardigans with Rise and Shine. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Pile Driver Waltz by Alex Turner of the English band Arctic Monkeys. I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh, and the morning run continues. It is the 19th of March, 2018. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899. Or tweeting us at BFM Radio. In fact, you can join a Twitter poll that we have up, which says, should we pay women for domestic and parental work? Now, the options are no, love is enough, yes, don't exploit women, yes, but it's not practical. So these are the options that you have. 17% go to no, 50% say yes, don't exploit women, 33% say yes, but is it really practical? Tell us what you think. We have a story on the gender gap, and it's coming from the entertainment world, isn't it, Joyce?
That's right, Sharad. So this is on Netflix's series called The Crown. Apparently, the Queen is paid less than Prince Philip. So the actress...
Well, not in real life.
No, no.
Not in real life.
The actress that plays the Queen, Claire Foy, she is paid less than her co-star Matt Smith, who plays the Queen's husband. So basically, the executive producers acknowledged this recently. And when they were asked how come he's paid more than her, although she is the star. If you watch The Crown...
Well, she's the protagonist, yeah.
Yeah, she's the star and she has the most lines. She has the most lines. She had the most on-screen time, but she's paid less.
But because, you know, the question is, and how do wages in the film or television industry get, get calculated? Is it really on the basis of how many lines you have? Or is it about your star quality? You might have, you know, a cameo role in a major film, but you might actually be paid big bucks. I mean, per word, as it were.
Okay, well, but I guess the gender gap is real. It's not just... I mean, if you're talking about Hollywood, it happens just in the ordinary offices as well. I mean, recently, Goldman Sachs... I mean, it's not an ordinary office. It's a top bank. But it came up and it was revealed that men in Goldman Sachs earn about twice as much as women. It was a recent revelation.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
I think nothing
it
shocks
happens
us anymore
everywhere.
About
yeah,
the
when
gender
it comes
gap,
to gen- the gender, gender gap. Yeah.
But, you know, coming back to The Crown, I mean, are you a fan of The Crown?
Yes, I watch it.
Oh, I see. I started, I must say, I found it very difficult after a while to get into The Crown, especially when, you know, when you think about what they're trying to push. I think it's really attempt to what I might call a re-enchantment with the royals. I mean, these are the British royals in this instance, you know, and I didn't find them particularly exciting.
I watched it the first series. After that, I haven't had time to catch up, but I find it interesting.
You've done
the first season. Yeah.
You know, I do find it, though, when they go back in time, and as it were, because it is because from a different time, because they're tracing the rise of Elizabeth Windsor, Queen of England, is, you know, they're kind of true to the moment. So when they're in Rhodesia, remember, Rhodesia was run by a kind of white-dominated government, I think it was Princess Anne who, you know, who says something like, you know, oh, you know, us white people, we're surrounded by black folks. And what is interesting about it is the camera pans to the faces of, you know, Africans or Rhodesians, or Zimbabweans as we call them today, you know, and they look kind of dubious when these remarks are being made. I mean, I think the television creators or the creators of this particular season seem to be sensitive to that. But coming back to the question of the gender gap.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, you said, is it because of star quality, right? So the producers are saying that Matt Smith was paid more because due to his Doctor Who fame, which they say would rectify, and they will look into rectifying the gender gap, the pay gap later in the future, but they do acknowledge that he was paid more because of his Doctor Who fame. But the thing that I do not understand is that Foy, right, she made less money than Smith during the second season despite gaining popularity. So she's gaining more fame and she's winning things, right? She won a Golden Globe, a Screen Actors Guild, and a nomination for Primetime Emmy.
Joy, so, she probably said when she went to the bargaining table, she probably said, hugs are enough. You see, that's what got her. That's why she's being paid less. She said hugs is enough instead of standing her ground.
Well, Sharad, so do you think it's a gender thing? Is it a confidence thing? Because I remember at the World Capital Markets Symposium that was organized recently by the Securities Commission, there was this lady on stage she's Vicky Lay and she is a co-founder of a startup in Australia. And she shares her experience of when she's hiring two people, male and female, offering them, they have the same education, same experience, working experience. She offered the female and the male same package. The female would go, oh, thank you for even giving me this job. Like, so appreciative. The male would be, no, this package is not good enough. I deserve more. So she says, at the end of the day, sometimes women are just not confident enough. Oh, or
maybe.
They feel that.
And we see this repeated over the House of Cards. Famously, Kevin Spacey had, I don't know what the quantum of the gap was, but he was paid much, much more than Robin Wright, who played his wife.
Who was the star there? That was Kevin Spacey, right?
Well, I mean, in some sense, he was a star because he came into that with a huge body of work.
In The Crown, I mean, Claire is, like, she's the star in the show, and you can see that she has delivered
Claire
results.
Underwood.
No, Claire Foy in
Claire
the, coming
the
back
actress.
To her. Yeah,
yeah,
but
see,
she's just paid so much less, and basically she has proven herself so that she is also a star in her own right.
Hugs,
she deserves more pay.
Hugs are never enough. Hugs are just not good enough. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll be back. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9, The Beach Boys with Wild Honey, a song from 1967. I'm Sharad Kutan. With me, Joyce Goh, and the morning run continues. Remember, you can always be part of this conversation by WhatsApping us or tweeting us. And we do have a Twitter poll. So join that Twitter poll and tell us what you think. Now, we're on to a story that's gone viral in the sense that a lot of people on social media are talking about it, very unhappy with what came of this particular case. And it was a case of a Malaysian who abused her Indonesian domestic worker quite severely. Now, at the Sessions Court, she changed her plea from not guilty to guilty to causing a grievous harm. And as a consequence, it seems, the Sessions Court sentenced her to a good behavior bond.
What does that mean?
Well, I think it means that she doesn't have to have... there's no custodial sentence. She's not going to be fined. She is just obliged to behave good within the time frame that the court determines.
Right.
But at any rate, it struck a lot of Malaysians as very lenient, considering the kind of harm that she'd actually caused this young man. And also, I think, for many, you know, gave the wrong message. The courts had given the message that you could engage in such horrendous abuse and get away with it, as it were.
That's right, Sharad. If you look at the article and it shows the photo of the maid, it looked really, really serious and scary. And basically, in the article, it says that a video showed her domestic worker being seriously injured and lying near a drain in a housing area that has gone viral in December 2016. And the Dutton, this is the person that's been accused, right, had allegedly used a kitchen knife, a clothes hanger, a steel mop, and an umbrella to cause multiple injuries to her employee's head, hands, legs, and internal organs.
Right. So and it's good that you mentioned the title that she has, that she's a datin. Now, this is also, of course, has become part of the conversation. The conversation is, people with such titles, right? Does it make them immune from, you know, getting a just sentence? In this case, just for the victim, not for her. And it goes back to, I guess, a kind of popular chatter around people with honorifics like Dato, you know, Dato, Dato Sri, Tan Sris and Tuns, all of whom we presume got those titles because of something exceptional that they gave to the public, of good works that they did.
Something they did for Malaysia or something.
For the country or for their community. That this is an honor, and that, you know, in some ways, because they carry that honor, they should conduct themselves in a manner accordingly, right?
That's right.
That's not happening. We see so many cases. I mean, the media is sometimes very coy. I like to say, you know, a datuk was found doing this, that, and the other. I mean, or a datin was found doing this, that, and
that's
the other.
That's right. This article says, this FMT article, the headline is, "Lawyers in Shock After Datin Who Abused Maid Escapes Jail."
Yeah, so I think this is perhaps, you know, maybe, you know, Joyce, there is an undercurrent of a concern about how elites in the country conduct their public and private affairs. Are they, and do they see themselves as, you know, immune to prosecution? Now, has it come to a point where honours like Dato and Datin are so now so completely tainted that, you know, even if you're a good person, you might actually not want to have a datoship or a datinship?
I know someone who has been offered a datoship and he declined.
Oh, really?
And someone in the media.
And did he have to explain why he declined?
I think so. I'm not sure what happened, but yeah, that's what I heard. I haven't confirmed or verified it, but I think it's true.
Okay. So there are people, of course, who don't want those
honorifics. But it depends, yeah. But maybe also because they feel that if it comes with the title, then other things come with it.
Yeah, there's strings attached. But I think coming back to the question of, has the value of, at least when it comes to this level, these honors of Dato, because you get a Dato, and both a man and a woman can get a Datoship, right? And because the Datin is preserved for women, right?
Who are married to a Dato.
Married to a Dato. But the point remains, you know, because we've had so many cases over the last decade or so, has it become, almost something that you wouldn't want? I mean, is it something that's so tainted that perhaps it would be good to just scrap the awards and give it a new name?
Well, to be fair, Sharon, I know the Dato or Dato Sri, there was one, I think it was taken away after what he did was. I can't remember what was it that he did, but it was an abusive, I think he hit someone or something, and then it was taken away. The title was taken away.
Yeah, I think there probably have been instances where people have lost their titles because of particular things that they've done, or perhaps they've fallen foul of the palace that gave them those awards. Because federal government also gives awards. There is an appeal going on, and we see what's going to come out of that. Now, we're coming up to the next bulletin of the morning. That's at 7 o'clock. And taking us there, the Red Hot Chili Peppers with Scar Tissue. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Joyce Goh, and the morning run continues. It's just a little past 6 minutes after 7 in the morning. It's the 19th of March. And remember, you can always be part of this conversation by WhatsApping us at 018-789-8899 or tweeting us at BFM Radio. Well, for many human rights advocates, last week represented a real sea change in the way we deal with our laws, in particular mandatory sentencing. The removal of the mandatory death sentence for drug offences under the Dangerous Drugs Act 2017 began last week. While many welcomed this move, Joyce, an organisation calling itself Malaysians Against Death Penalty and Torture say there are still major flaws in the Act.
Well, sure. To recap, with the amendment to the Act, judges are now given the discretion to sentence convicted drug traffickers with a life sentence alternative with no less than 15 strokes of the whip.
Yeah, so I mean, the returning discretion to the part of the judge, you know, to the judges, I think, of course, is always a welcome move, because that's what we have judges for. They're not robots and automatons. They're not just passing sentences that are fixed in the books, as it were. They need to understand context,
the circumstances,
and take all those things into consideration. But because, as some people put, you know, there are some flaws. I mean, because there is a big debate globally about the value or place of the death sentence in a modern society. Some think there remains a reason to have it. Some are against it. Joyce, have you made up your mind about, you know, this question? I mean, do you have a strong opinion one way or the other?
I think it depends on the circumstances and the situation. I'm still figuring that out. But what about yourself?
Well, you know, I'm against the death penalty, partly because I think of what we understand of the criminal justice system. It is flawed. It's run by people, and innocent people can, in fact, find themselves at the end of a hangman's noose, or, you know, or in an electric chair. And we know this over and over again in countries where the death penalty is practiced. There are miscarriages of justice, and I don't think, you know, you ever want to be in a situation where you sent an innocent person to the to his death, or his or her death, and for those simple reasons. But it is a complex issue.
Tell us
what you think. You can always WhatsApp, as we said, or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, we spoke with Gwen Lee. She's the interim executive director of Amnesty International. She shares her concerns regarding the amendments to the Dangerous Drug Act 2017.
Yeah, actually, Amnesty International Malaysia was disappointed at the legislative amendments to the Dangerous Drug Act that is passed last year in November. So we actually been working on this for quite some time, and we waited for the amendments for years and only see very little change to the law that provided that the mandatory death penalty is already problematic. This is because Malaysian judges can rely on presumptions of drug possession and trafficking, which, when invoked, shift the burden of proof from the prosecution to the defendant. So this amendment also requires the judge to make life or death decisions based on a limited set of circumstances provided by the amendments. So the mandatory death penalty will be retained for all but the extremely narrow circumstances of those convicted of merely transporting, carrying, sending or delivering a prohibited substance, and who also are found to have cooperated with law enforcement in disrupting drug trafficking activities. So when discretion is available, life imprisonment and not less than 15 strokes of the whip. Yeah.
The new amendment is not applied retroactively, that is, to previous convictions, which means that it won't benefit those who have already received a death penalty. The question, of course, which we posed to Gwen, is why is this the case?
Well, that is how the law was drafted, and it was not amended any further before it was passed. We lobbied at Parliament to allow for retrospective review for past sentences, but it was not adopted into the bill at that point, yeah.
So we asked Gwen, how likely is it that those who have been sentenced to death before the amendment came into effect, how likely are they to escape it?
So we are not sure as of yet until we see the bill in use and its progress. So I mentioned before, the bill the amendment will be applied to the cases that have not been trialed or sentenced. So it will take some time before we can actually see the full effect. Since the amendment has no effect on retrospective cases, those sentenced already will have to wait for their royal clemency appeals if they have applied for them before. Yeah.
With the amendment, judges can only impose a life sentence together with 15 strokes of the whip as the alternative to the death sentence. There are calls from groups such as Malaysians Against Death Penalty and Torture to allow judges to give jail terms of different lengths. Gwen shares her thoughts about these suggestions.
So Amnesty International is advocates for the Malaysia government to provide more alternative sentences than the death penalty. So this can be done giving full discretion to the judges. We think that this is the best situation for the future amendments. Yeah.
That was Gwen Lee, Interim Executive Director of Amnesty International, with her thoughts on the abolishment of the mandatory death penalty for drug offences under the Dangerous Drugs Act 2017. Any of that kind of move you, Joyce? Do you think that you might change your views on the basis of those comments?
Well, as I said, sure, it depends on the the circumstances and why were drugs on them. And right. Were they pushers? Were they all out, like, how much drugs were found on them as well? Or were they just drug mules? They didn't know what they were working
into. Yeah, in fact,
into.
We've had so many cases of drug mules, Malaysian drug mules around the world, especially women, I think, languishing in jails. It was taken up as an issue in the media some years ago, and I think it's since disappeared from the media's, kind of radar.
Yeah, so if it's a drug mule, the circumstances are different as opposed to a drug pusher who's all out trying to get young kids to get hooked onto drugs. I mean, circumstances, right?
Okay, we'll be back with a look at our morning papers as well as the portal. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.